proposed Board of Education special work session. Today is Monday, June 16th, 2025, and the time is 5 p.m. Jeannie, can we roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Heck.
Here.
Mr. Jenkins.
Here.
Mrs. Myers.
Here.
Mrs. Tarassi.
Here.
Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Here, maybe here. I know we had a United Way board meeting at 4, and so I half hour ago. It was still going, so. Well, it would have been, I think, last August, September, when she started right there. Okay, next up is discussion items. All right, well, good evening, everybody. We're going to actually kind of go in a little different order. We're going to talk, I've got Bill Lyle and Ian Burke from Captain's Insurance with us. We're going to talk a little bit about liability and property and casualty insurance. So we think about it like this. We have our medical insurance, and then we have liability insurance, okay? Liability is two separate buckets, right? The liability is just one piece of insurance. Okay, we're going to have them do a presentation here because we've been with SETSEG and many schools in the state of Michigan have been with SETSEG for years. And it's one of those areas I can look at and an opportunity to potentially save some money and can't find out. You've got to go through the process. So they're here and they've got handouts to talk about.
Thank you, Andy.
We use them for our medical insurance. We do not use them for this. So,
Captain Insurance, we have been in business for, we're now third generation, over 80 years in business. We're one of the largest insurers in the state of Michigan. We continue to grow. One of our niche practice areas is public entity, municipal school districts. I'm a member of that group. Ian is a member of that group. Ian is on the benefit side. My specialty is on the property and casualty side. So we work very closely together with many groups. It's a team approach. I just specialize on the property and casualty, Ian on the benefit side. So I've been meeting with Andy and Cassie for months now. We, as a broker, we are able to go to the marketplace and handpick insurance carriers that fit base public school district. And we choose to negotiate and put together an insurance program with multiple insurance carriers. Hanover is what we're presenting to you today. Hanover came and toured high school and a couple of the elementary schools in what we call a pre-loss control visit, where they look at all of your plans, procedures. They look at what potential areas that they could improve and put together a loss control report for the underwriter, who then goes to work putting this and the premiums. So what we're presenting tonight is Hanover's all-encompassing property and casualty program covering your property with the
No.
Totally different company.
Like, we already worked with a company called Hanover, and I'm like, maybe they're the same, and you're just adding.
Hanover is a very large national group. One of their practical areas, one of their specialties is public safety districts. You may know the carrier Citizens, which is a longtime Michigan insurance carrier. Hanover acquired Citizens years ago and brought all of the depth of resources and tools and coverage forms to the Citizens to help them build out their network of business. And so
Our charge was to take a look at your current program, your partners at FEG, see where we can improve or could improve upon coverage, but also try to get close or improve the pricing that is available to you. One of the difficulties for years was SETSAG being a risk pool sharing with many districts into it. Their pricing was very competitive, but over the last couple of years, like many, the insurance marketplace has hardened or rates have continually increased, and you've seen that with SETSAG over the last couple of years. So that gap has been able to be closed. So when you take a look at each line item, we lay out the premiums, we lay out the coverage. One of the things I want to point out, a nice feature of Hanover, is that they're agreeing to a two-year rate guarantee, where that's kind of unheard of in these times of the hard market, where carriers are trying to clean up books of business, pay for catastrophic losses, make up for poor underwriting, poor investment strategies over the last few years. And so that's where you've seen SETSAG, and I think it's been in the 3 to 6% over the last 3 to 5 years of what they've been trying to pass on as far as rate increase. And that will only continue. So one of the advantages of working with Capnic as your insurance partner, we're able to go to the marketplace each and every year and hand-pick multiple insurance carriers to take a look at your insurance program. Where with SETSAG, you're at the beck and call of their underwriting and their directive as far as what they're going to do from a coverage and price standpoint. So working with an independent broker, we're able to be a little bit more flexible each and every year, such as it being able to agree to a two-year rate guarantee with Hanover. So you wouldn't see that fluctuation from the marketplace, from SETSAG, with trying to pass another rate increase off to the district next year. One of the coverage enhancements or advantages of their program, currently you have an $8 million excess umbrella. That umbrella sits over your primary general liability, your auto liability, your educator's legal liability, professional liability, and the abuse and molestation coverages. Currently, SETSAG sublimits the abuse and molestation to $5 million. So in the event of a lawsuit, you have your $1 million primary. You would have $5 million that sits over that in the event of a lawsuit. Hanover doesn't sublimit each of those lines, so you would have a full $8 million excess umbrella limit that would sit over all of your primary liability.
I'm sorry, you might have already answered this. Why are we comparing these two companies in particular?
Well, SETSAG is your current, so the left side is your current carrier.
Oh, so we do, this is what we use now?
Yes.
Yes.
I missed that part, I'm sorry.
And we went to multiple other carriers. We went to Liberty, we went to Selective, Hanover. Hanover is the best program that fits what we are trying to do today. Not to say in 3 years. There being maybe a different here. And that's what we do as your broker, is look at this, look at the marketplace each and every year, and go to market when necessary to compete with our current Hanover program, or if we're successful, your current Hanover program. Where SETSAG is just a risk-sharing pool, what they provide you for coverage, what they provide you for price, there are no other options. They are the insurance carrier, based for all intents and purposes. My point three, and I kind of skipped through, I highlight kind of the enhancements that on the last two pages where you see the blue. And I'm highlighting the differences rather than going through each and every line item. Claims management control. Right now, if there is a claim and you've had a few, you go to SETSAG, which is the insurance company. You work with their adjusters. You work with their legal defense. And they dictate how that claim is going to be managed. As your broker, Capnic, we have our own in-house claims management team that manages that claim process for you, working with the insurance carrier.
So we're your advocate in each and every claim, as opposed to now, you're direct with SetSeg, the insurance carrier. There is no advocate acting on your behalf. So there's one of the key differences between risk. I talk about our risk services portal, our risk management platform. The way it's structured now, SetSeg is your, again, I keep highlighting this, your insurance carrier. When they bring their loss control or their risk control people on site and they find things wrong or things they'd like you to change when it comes to protecting your assets, you have to change them. And it could be large monetary investments. One of the things I'll point out, water monitoring, alarm systems. That's a big thing right now with insurance carriers. They want to see monitoring systems. If SetSeg makes that recommendation to you, you pretty much have to do what they're asking you to do. Where we have our in-house risk control team led by Amy DeKaiser, Adam Wilberding. All they do is risk control, safety, building inspections, mock OSHA training, mock OSHA walkthroughs. One of the things Hanover will do for you is they will actually install the water monitoring devices. So your team at each facility will be alerted in the event of a pipe burst, a flood, something that causes water into the building. That helps mitigate your loss. So they find out about it right away. They deploy their resources. They work with your team closely to take care of that issue, whatever it may be. Right now, SetSeg is going to ask you to do that, or could ask you to do that. It's going to cost the district money to go out, purchase those devices, install those. Another area could be a sprinkler system. Hanover ran flow tests at some of your facilities, mainly the high school. They're very good, but SetSeg could say, we need you to improve your flow or install a water pump. We are proactive. We come out and do that for you. We work for the district. We don't work for the insurance company. Whereas now SetSeg is the insurance company. They dictate what you're going to do with them. Program flexibility. Being in a risk pool sharing program that SetSeg is, you're sharing or you're a part of a larger pool. You in a group that may not be as nice as you, may not be as clean as you when it comes to the way your facilities are. Or placed in a group that could affect your premiums in the long run. If another district has a catastrophic loss, it affects your premiums. Whereas being outside of a risk pool, such as an insurance company like Hanover, you don't have to worry about that. There is no risk pool. It's just the insurance company. They buy reinsurance, and they have reinsurance treaties. And although you're part of an insurance carrier, rates aren't dictated by other members of that risk-sharing pool. So it's another advantage of we're able to go out and work with a large company and not have rates dictated by other members of the public school districts.
Adding to that, it's something very similar to what we're doing over on the benefit side, which is one of the reasons why you guys have all hired Cabinet. There are a lot of best practices out there that when you're in a risk pool and you're sharing with all of other environments, maybe they're not participating in the best practices, but if you were using the best practices, you could shrink your risks, shrink your exposure, and ultimately change what you're spending, how you're spending it. And that's why having an independent agency such as us evaluate whatever your programs are, we also know what those types of best practices are out there and how can we help take steps over the next 2, 3, 4 years to change the entire situation and what we're looking at. What are the risk exposures overall on the health insurance side? Right, it's how are we managing the population health? How are we managing the overall claims that turn into premiums for the population? That's what we're looking forward to doing on the commercial insurance side too.
There's more flexibility. we're able to look at higher deductibles. We're able to structure the insurance program differently, whereas SETSAG has their filed program, and that's what you get each and every year is the same deductible limits. Coverages on other lines of business. Well, we're able to take a look at each and every policy line item each year, have a strategy meeting 3-4 months to your renewal, and come up with a strategy. How can we structure this in your best interest? To, in the long term, as Ian said, it's a long-term play. We want just not initial savings. We want savings in year 2, year 3, year 4, and that's by structuring the insurance program correctly, as well as being proactive when it comes to loss control, safety, and building management. Finally, I highlight a few more items when it comes to risk-sharing pools. Transparency and accountability. We're your insurance broker. We're going to be transparent. We're going to be held accountable for the program we put in place each and every year. When you're with a group such as you are now, keep stating it. They're the insurance company. They dictate what coverage you can buy. They dictate what premium you're going to buy that at. As your broker, we're the middleman or the intermediary between you and the insurance company. So we're able to dictate to the insurance company what we think rates should look like, what coverages should look like, what services should be provided. So really, we act as your advocate. Our best interest is yours, not the insurance company. We're being a part of a risk sharing pool. You don't have that accountability in that. Questions?
Can you explain the net asset return that SETSAG has? What is that now?
Yes. Each year, SETSAG gives us a quote for our premium, and then if we pay timely when it's due, then a few months later, they send a check for a net asset return, and they quote that amount on the premium. It's basically a cost share of the over the pool, so to speak.
Affected each and every year by your losses, but also the overall performance of that fund or that pool. So I think that's something that has decreased each and every year as well, mm-hmm. is what.
So I have a question on the business portal. They're not price difference. But what we're looking at is what we get for the dollars. Is that what we're looking at here?
Correct. The long-term potential flexibility in how we manage your insurance program, how we kind of design the insurance program, and that advocate on your behalf is a flex.
This includes your services as well as the insurance company. This is the total cost for...
We're compensated by the insurance company, so...
Okay.
So the big picture is that, so SETSAG that I spoke up earlier has been around for a long time. They do a good job. Don't get us wrong. Worked with them for many years. This is a, for us, you know, a $286,000 cost every year. And then it goes up as we see insurance go. The difference between the two programs is that SETSAG is the insurance company, and so they don't go out and do any other marketing. Marketing is going to talk to other insurance companies. By bringing in a CAFNIC, they're looking at other insurance companies and then trying to figure out how to help us control their costs, looking at saying, listen, we've seen that now really doing a deeper analysis that you had X claims or you could actually go from this kind of level of coverage, you know, like how we do with our cars. Well, okay, I'm okay right now going from $500 deductible to $1,000. It's going to save you this. That's what it gets into there is you got to have insurance. Is there a way? The 2-year rate guarantee. So what you really have to think about in totality is a push over 2 years on the cost for us to have our liability insurance for Monroe Public Schools. But what you get if the board was wanting to say, yes, let's make that step would be is that now you're into the ability where each year they're looking at Hanover, but then they're also looking potentially at other companies going now to really know Monroe and to other companies that weren't at the table right here that might use to be a little bit, have a stronger appetite. The nice thing is all the information, you see they have to have the particular coverages. I mean, that's the thing, so.
What's our renewal date?
July 1st.
July 1st. So the SETSAG is their quote going forward from July 1st?
That is our quote for July 1, 25 to June
30th. For both. Yep,
you are. So we have to make a decision
next week. So either based on this I'm sorry.
Yep.
Based on the conversation that we have tonight, we will get an indication from the board whether you would like to see a motion to change insurance carriers. If the conversation leads that you would like to stay with SetSed, then there's no option part of.
But we can't do that.
No, it would be more about a tone in the room.
We
understand tones.
Right. Sorry. You got that by now?
I have that now.
Sorry, you could bring the motion forward for consideration on the meeting next Tuesday.
Yep.
And is it, go ahead. Is this every year or every 2 years? I know there's a 2 year guarantee.
Yeah,
so
the program renews each and every year, so it's still renewed July of 2026 again. But they're holding the rates stable.
So they wouldn't go up for that period of time.
Right.
Let's say we say we don't want Hanover, we want SetSeg. Do you still broker us for SetSeg?
No. So SetSeg is a direct. They are the insurance company. They only work with their own people. And from my understanding, you had some long-time relationships there that are
no longer there.
The last couple of years. And so that relationship, that
no
liaison
longer
that
there.
You had.
I understand that conversation.
I think the last 3 years we've had a different range.
Yeah. And it used to be, 10 years ago, I think that the treatment and the just what can we do for you piece, I think through the years, has... With the changeover of people has really kind of disappeared for us. I don't deal with them as much as Cassie does, but I do go to their presence even in conferences is not the same. All of the people that were pretty much dynamos in that company that worked with education people are gone.
And with the constant turnover of people, you can't build that relationship with them because they're just.
As I look at this, I see it's $286,000 for SetSeg with no broker.
Right.
That's SetSeg, that's it. It's $291,000 with Hanover and you guys.
Right.
So your portion of payment is coming out of that $291,000.
Correct.
So actually their premium is whatever it is. But it's not $286,000.
Yeah, your dollars are what you see right there. We're compensated as a commercial percent
from Hanover.
And I'll be completely upfront and honest, it's 10% is what we're getting from Hanover.
You work with other companies?
Oh, yes. So
Hanover is just one of the choices that you all.
Right. Decide. We went to Selective, we went to Liberty, we went to Hanover when we started marketing this 3 months ago. When it came down to it, Selective was going to be quite a bit higher. Liberty, there till the end. Their issue was liability was that large claim for the suicide. And it's just carrier appetite. And so even though you were taken out of that lawsuit, still shows up as claim reserves. On your loss runs, and that was just something they wanted to see another year of activity. So, the next year could be those three as well, and new markets enter the marketplace. Or if we decide to, let's structure this differently, let's maybe take on some higher deductibles because you don't have claims, let's keep the money in the district's policy and fund for long-term liabilities. It may be a Travelers or a Chubb or whoever that focuses and specializes in what we call high retention deductible programs. So it provides the flexibility.
How much have, with SetSeg, how much have the increases been the last two or three?
Last year to this year is about 4%,
4%.
And last year it was probably a 2-3%. It wasn't. Oh. Last year wasn't too bad. This year, both our premium went up and our net asset return went down.
Next year could be higher and the net asset lower.
And they were, when they come out in the spring, our rep let us know the rates were increasing upwards of 8-10%. So we were lucky to only see 4%. And the net increase to us from last year's to this year was a little over $11,000 more.
So the risk is there that next year
it could go
higher.
Further.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the rates over the contracts that have been presented recently, like that, those numbers you're doing
right.
is a standard, they're not.
Yeah.
So 4% is, even though it's a good rate, yeah, it you can still see the impact.
Just based on the market, I wasn't shocked to hear them say 12%
yeah.
because of the late
rates. Which is why it's nice for a 2-year.
Right.
And I can tell you,
like signing a 2-year lease. Yeah.
We have another very large, two other very large districts that Hanover has held their rate now for 4 straight years. And in a hard marketplace or a very competitive marketplace, they're consistent. So they're not buying the business as shown by the 2-year rate guarantee. You're not able to buy you.
And that's where I think the, if we're looking at where's the advantage, one is having the captain bringing their team, but the bigger advantage is having 2 or 3 other companies that are going to be buying to try and get this business.
Yeah.
That becomes a advantage to us. So that becomes, but you can't get there without making that first step to
yeah.
go to like Hanover.
Yeah.
Knowing that Hanover for year one is going to cost $5,000. Okay, but that's step one. But it's just, I see. Thank you.
Yes.
For you guys working
on
this.
We have
one more question.
Yep, yeah. Yeah,
I was going to say,
we understand July 1 is coming. We're working with and trying to get this done, but it's a process. You can't just, in our auto world, we can call an insurance agent up today and tomorrow. You know, we actually call them today and have coverage today. You know, it took.
And if we become your partner next year, our plan is you start 120 days out from your renewal. And as your current, being a current client, we're presenting these now 30 to 45 days in advance. So it's that transition time of trying to get everything
yeah.
wrapped up. And
yeah. My point is, I used to want to think, like, okay, you wait until that. No, we've been at the table trying to get this done.
Bill will shoot me an email. I think these are the last questions. And then answer them and then.
Underwriters drive me crazy.
Now we've got these other questions.
We are actually had you guys on the calendar since the beginning of that.
Yeah.
And David, thank you too.
You said you had another question.
From me. You were, so thank you for providing me
no honor. Shared question
answering.
They
didn't.
No, but it shows because there was a. But
there's defense costs
there was
associated with it. So there's still.
Do the legal,
that's the biggest part of insurance claims, particularly lawsuits, is the defense. You don't see a ton of payments made at the end. It's cost.
And you have to defend.
Yep.
Okay, this is like a totally irrelevant question, but why is the cyber cost, the premium on the cyber, so different? I mean, that's almost like pretty significant.
SetSafe, their niche, their specialty is in cyber. So there's some enhancements built into our program with Travelers that are a little bit broader. There's some services and resources built into it. One, for example, is monthly vulnerability tests. All insurance carriers do this. I'm not sure about SetSafe. But vulnerability tests, where you get alerted to potential holes where a cyber criminal could get into your network. So there's ancillary services a part of it. Plus, SetSig almost thinks of this as a throw-in, so they don't really price accordingly. They don't have a ton of experience in cyber, so it's more of a throw-in coverage than they price it anyway.
Because if you take that $6,000, you
have
it off the air. Now you've got the numbers at the end.
You don't know how many times I've looked at the spreadsheet to try to find areas to save. Our goal is, yes, we want to save you money. But our number one goal is to protect your assets, your physical assets, the children, the teachers, drivers, even though they're not your employees. So,
it doesn't say it in here. Is the deductible still the same?
Yeah, it would match the same. Yeah.
I didn't see it in there, so I just wanted
to make sure that was. Yep. $25,000 deductible option, it would save about $9,000 to $10,000, but we want it to be
apples to apples when it comes to that. So on the first page, if you want to just be a little bit entertained, we have $100,000 exposure on earthquake. I find that one to be highly entertaining in our area. But I think if we look at our whole system, we have $260 million worth of exposure. So just a reminder of y'all, we got a big district. Okay.
What is inland marine?
Inland marine would be, example would be bands, equipment, uniforms, physical assets that move around. So it's a blanket coverage that you may have some equipment in some schools one day and moves to another school the other day. So it's a blanket
transportation
movement.
Yep. What is personal property in the open?
Personal property in the open would be, call it, every carrier calls it something a little bit differently. But again, it's property that's open up physical buildings. So sheds could be mowers.
Playground
equipment. Not part of a physical building.
Like in a, I'm sorry. Like, to me, it's things that are not stored like in a physical
right.
And they might be sitting out, even though a shed is kind of like a building, it's kind of not the same.
Right.
Doesn't have the fire protection.
That's 12
million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep,
we went
so
through.
So I'm trying to, like, think what was
good in that. So. Any other questions for our visitors tonight? Thank you for having
us.
We appreciate it greatly. That's what we look forward to. If there's other questions, certainly reach out. Just put a little bit of Kaepernick Mark being here on the back couple of pages, but
Adrian Troy, Ann Arbor,
Grand Rapids, Lansing.
Are you on 223?
Right on 223 across the Adrian College.
Okay.
So that's the home office. Yes. Yeah. That's where it started 80 years ago, and
quite a few slogans. Is that over the 100 years, or is that current
use? It's current use is terms that we built on in every year. Yeah.
It's fun.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
So our next one, we're going to pop back up to number one now, is facilities and pool offerings discussion right there. So on this one, we were talking about looking at potentially setting different dates to talk over depending on the regards to bond right there or not a bond. And so we're just brought that back in here tonight. They even decide we want to continue on to a different another meeting in July. And said in that last meeting we're setting these up separately so that we can just focus on that one item there. And the next two, understand that really it's a lot of us sometimes we try to dodge bonds, okay, where we can, because it's a lot of work, and then when they fail, there's a lot of people like, what's going on right there? I'm just bringing it forward only because of where our facilities are at as far as finishing up stuff. People brought up the pool, and so I knew we needed to make some final decisions. And so I want to share with you some information that if you flip your little papers over, these papers over, just so you can see it. Just as an example, okay, if we went to your, and I want to timeline this out for you. If you went to the voters in November of 26, okay, there's two options, August or November of 26. And one of the conversations was November. So if we go in November of 26, if it was to pass, you're going to start in January of 27 through November of 27. That's all planning, okay? Hopefully, December of 27, there's bidding going out. All that work in early January, February of 28. Construction begins in June of 28. We're talking about, when we say the construction, we got there's a lot of different things could be happening, but this would be like the day that I get the high school or the pool, okay? Talking about an 18-month to two-year build. So the most likely, you're looking at August of 2030,
when people would be using and diving into a pool. Okay? So I'm sharing that with just as a point of this is one of those things that's a long-term conversation around reality of, and I'll give you an easy example, Yvonne. So Yvonne does my ear about once a month, okay? I'll go every 6 weeks. And I just was, I'll tell you, so you just need to understand even the timeline. Even if we were to figure out some mechanism to even address our current pool, you know, you're still talking about 2 years before that pool, you know, is going because of the planning process and all that. So I'm just sharing with you that when we start thinking about that work, it won't physically being used, you're not until fall of 2030. Now, those other projects talk about, you know, air in other buildings or other finish work, yeah, that'll be happening over that time period. Like we've been doing these plans right here each summer, but that bigger project, that's what that would look like. For you guys, though, the reason why I asked for it to be on these special nights was simply for the simple fact of talk it out. And if there's no appetite by the board, then we let the community know that there's no appetite. We just step away. Or is there some form of an appetite? I don't know. I've talked with Carrie Blanchett from KFM so we can give you numbers. We've got Kohler, so we're going to make sure that there's specific numbers on and everything right there. But after that, that scope could shift from nothing to something. But unless you have a conversation, you don't know. With a November election, though, we have to have things in Lansing for November. I want to say it's going to be like probably February, March of 26. Okay. So you have to take things to Lansing. They have to approve it. It's a bond qualification. And then you guys, a couple months later, make a call for the vote, all that stuff. So that's why you can't, no longer, if I go, didn't do anything to have any conversations with you, I don't want to be in that sense of we're hurrying. Okay, I know that as a community, they've really worked hard on the last bond and really moved it through. But, for us, that time of next, we're on June 15th already, gang, which is killer. If you think about graduation, right? And so we'll be snow here in March or January. So I just want to give you dates, kind of give you an idea of what would apply here to there.
This is the game that we got and the list of things that we can complete.
So,
this is my notes. Somewhat organized.
So tonight's conversation is more about, do we continue a conversation? And if we do, we can go month by month, or do we not? And then if we do, then I'll line up materials come in, okay, so that you can start looking at these things here, cost, to do we put them in groups? What do we not? I mean, that's more of an open conversation, you know, for all of us to have, because it's not, just bluntly, it's not the Andy Shaw plan, it's not the Dave Payne plan, it's the whole thing that we're going to share information, and as a collective group, is there something that we want to do, or do we not? I don't know.
I'll start. That's all right. Well, one of the things that I brought up when this came up was, you look at the community's pockets, they have one pocket.
Yeah.
And that pocket is being dipped in repeatedly all the time. And, you know, it's not like wages are rising. It doesn't mean that the cost of living is going down. The amount of money that is in that pocket is hopefully stagnant, but it's probably not. It's probably decreasing on a basis. So we look at who's asking for money from the community that our needs. You always have fire departments, you always have police departments, you always have those standard ones that are necessary. We've got the college is asking for one. So my biggest thing would be what is already wanting to come out of their pocket before, when we're in an economic downturn, most likely, if not, you know, headed even further down, how do we tack this on, because they're already paying off the other one. So anybody get that information?
Yeah. So what we would do is we'd have a conversation around the point of
if that can happen, do we then go, listen, we pull it all together, it's going to cost us to do the work, and we can see where the economy is at right now, and now we have justification to our community why we're not putting it out there, i.e. the pool people. Okay?
I think that's the first
That's the thing there. But the point is this, that we gather, you go through the process of gathering all the information. The economic downturn, that's a gauge that we would all have to do later on, because you won't, because as we walk out, I mean this wholeheartedly of being in different districts right here, everyone views it in an economic downturn. I mean, occasionally we get people that do want to vote yes on a school millage, but rarely, I mean, that's not a normal thing.
Demographics, and when we talk about academics and we talk about a bunch of functioning within the system, demographics is always brought up. And it's always brought up in a way, this is the way I perceive it being brought up, as, hey, we have a very low functioning demographic within our school system, therefore that's why you see what you do. And if that's true, then I believe it to be true, then well, how can we go ask them for more money when we don't even know where that is? And
so
for me, that's step one.
Yeah, so, well,
I can't,
so what we can that. Yeah, so what we can do, we can find, and Carrie can help us with this, is gather the information of what our median income is and what our household.
Well, we already have that. We've already got that from census. We already got that data last year. That's not the data I'm asking about. I'm just bringing that up as an idea.
Oh.
I want to know what is already coming out of their pockets. What are they already paying for? How much money are they already giving to the school system? How much money are they giving to the college? How much money? Yeah. So for me, before we go out and say, hey, will you give us more money? I would like to know those numbers. And I don't know that.
I just got my summer tax credit.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, and I can summer, that. Yes, but we can. But we can get that for you.
Tax
should have it broken down between summer.
Are the, and this my lack of knowledge, are your tax bill, and their tax bill going to be comparable?
Because
you're a property owner versus in a trailer park.
Yeah.
Right.
You live in
the city.
Someplace like Green
Townships as opposed to city. It's all.
So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How much is coming out of. I understand what's coming out of.
That's right. We can find out from each township and then in the city what millage rates are being levied on tax on my properties.
Didn't find that.
And an increase.
So it's a nice vacation.
There,
a bond is beyond that.
No, it's not. Because it's still a millage. It's one or two mills. And you have to look at it for, fortunately, in the community of Monroe, the amount of money that we can generate compared to other districts, like, for example, two mills, looks a whole lot different. But we can generate that information right there. And then at, when it's all said and done, that we can use that, we'll use that to help make a decision. But
or
unless the state.
Towards the next step.
Well, I mean, right. Well, as I mentioned, unfortunately, right now in the state of Michigan, there is no other mechanism for school districts. And that's a junker of it all. I mean, there's no other mechanism, except for the taxpayers to support the local schools. On large projects like this. And I would not anticipate, I mean, I know they did a facility study in Lansing and all that stuff. I would not anticipate them coming up with any money.
Questions? There has been no movement. There has not been any movement on funding what the results of that facility survey was by the state at all. Historically, has there been, do we have the ability of splitting
the issues. So, for example, if we're talking we need facility work done versus the pool.
Yep. So, there's, so what will happen is we will work alongside, and this is at a no cost. So there are people, companies out there that will come alongside us and talk about strategy and what's smart way to go about. And so, yes, there is that. What we have to put into consideration is however we, and this is, again, this is really not a lot part of the conversation tonight, is the middle school becomes the factor, okay? If we were to make the decision to remodel the middle school, do any kind of update in middle school, that changes the factor, but if we use, take that middle school, the students, and go somewhere else, now some athletic facility will be a factor because you have gym space, okay? Mm-hmm. But other than that, you do see a lot of schools that do put together option A, B, or C, okay? Mm-hmm. And use it.
Especially with Andy earlier, because it would be nice to see, you know, from Kohler, what would be the cost or what would be the bond amount if we just upgraded or continued our upgrades. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that would be the minimum we'd probably go for.
Right.
Then the second thing would be, okay, take that plus the middle school, mm-hmm. let's say move out to the high school. The next level. And the third level would be, okay, now let's add the pool in. And the pool could be two separate issues. It could be just the $3 million, let's fix the pool, make it usable. An athletic facility. So there'd be different options.
There was talk about the middle school add-on at the high school and just taking one wing. Is that enough classrooms for the middle school?
Yeah, because what happens is you'd still put in.
That'd be their core class increase, and then they're going to go.
Yeah, you'd put in between one of the two wings, you put offices. So you'd have the middle school office, and then you'd have the support staff areas right there. But going into one of those wings, you could build a couple. You couldn't do that there.
I'm assuming you like the choir room would be jointly used,
so,
the band room.
Yeah.
So was there a cost, I don't want to say I'm going to carry the questions here, on the, because Hanford gets 5 cents, probably it's 5 cents.
Yeah.
So we got two grades in there.
Yep.
Middle school's two grades, 7 mm-hmm. and 8. And you look at Arborwood South, what would be the cost of building another Arborwood South as compared to moving students out?
So we're actually... Yeah, so what?
It still was your comparison. Not everybody's going to be happy about their kids being out from high school.
So you're going to have the following options when it comes to, for example, the 7-8 kids. Is A, you do nothing. B, update the current middle school. C, you build a new middle school. So what that costs is. D, you put wings on 5-6 building. Mm-hmm. Or E, you do something at the high school. So those,
can we get
those
a package
all have,
together for that, those of those
yeah,
options?
Yeah, you are going to get those options.
Yeah,
okay.
So that
you're
way
you
can cost take a look
of each
at
one
it.
So that you know, like, because you're going to have voters going to ask, well, why don't we just talk about building a 5-8 building, you know, out, you know, buy the property across from the high school and build over there and do that because of proximity. And, well, building a new facility is a $110 million bill. That doesn't touch finishing up anything.
But the bond suggestion is 70-something.
That's my point, is that we're going to get asked, well, how much is each option, and why did you select that option? So we will have all of those options for you so you can, you'll know. Because you'll be, some people will be like, I love the middle school. Why aren't we looking at rating that? And, well, here's the price tag to upgrade the middle school.
I'm engaging in this conversation. This is a conversation in a group discussion. Does not mean I'm on board.
Oh, nobody's on board yet.
Yeah,
No.
Us having a discussion doesn't mean, oh, we're going to keep going forward. We're going
to
keep going.
I don't think we have
plans
to be on board yet.
There would be, there's I think, Darla, at the end of the day, there's nothing solid. There will come a point where you'll have all the information. Yes, you at that point in time will need to make some form of decision. Okay, and that decision will be doing something or not doing something. And if we do something, this is what we believe we should do.
So you're saying, though, in order to get there, we have to give up every Monday for the entire month
of June? Oh, no. I was just
trying to keep the pace, so it was one Monday a month.
Because we didn't hold board meetings because it was on spring break. We didn't hold, and so that literally ties up the board members, you know, majority of their summer, which is also their summer as well.
No, I just said one in July, one in August, one in September, just to keep the pace. That was all.
You don't need them.
But you don't need them. So right now, I'm just recommending.
As long as they're correlating with not offline, then other people would use it for vacation time. Because
yeah.
Unfortunately, I will be late to all of these meetings because I have a board meeting.
Congratulations.
It's been a year.
It's a great group.
It's a great group.
I don't know. But it seems like maybe the next time we meet, we should have this in front of us.
I will
have. Just us sit here and just talk about this.
And that's all.
So does that make sense for my office?
So what I would propose is on July 14th, is that night, what I'll have is Carrie Blanchett will be here, so she's from PFL, if you're free, okay?
Yeah.
If you're not here.
Well, the point is that if we want to be engaged in it, I just don't want to have no options to go away out of town over the summer.
Oh, you can't. We can go to the 21st. But I was the 21st.
So why can't we just add them on our regular board work sessions and add it at the end? I would rather sit here and take one day and be here for an extra hour and give up every Monday and take an hour then.
Yeah.
That's my thought.
So let's we'll go ahead and go to the 21st. Just in the start. Okay.
For July.
Just
add it onto our regular work session.
The Monday, July. Yeah. 21st.
Isn't there a work session already?
No, not yet.
We've got that.
Yes. Just so we're not high up for the entire summer, even though we'd like to be engaged in this, that's not going to happen. So there won't be one on the
14th.
No, the 14th. Strictly for this.
I think there's going to be a lot of information provided today. If there could be, I'm not going to sit here at this very moment and say, there won't be anything else there.
Right.
Okay. And not say that.
It just seems like this needs something that we just need to talk
about. I want to hear what everybody's got to say.
These
different perspectives. I don't want to be distracted
by
all
that. We need Mary and whoever this is.
Absolutely.
They
have to be here.
But in the same night, we can do what we've done before and say the first hour we're going to focus on this, the second hour or 2 hours we could focus on this. We could hold this till the end so that there is nothing afterwards, so the discussion can continue as long as the board members would like. That's my suggestion.
I have no problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the only point I'll make on that is that there comes a functionality point for all of us where
yeah. –
our strength deteriorates very fast. Okay. Yeah. Old days. And so we have to please keep that all in mind.
Okay.
So
we'll start a question.
Yes,
at what point do like all the other entities have the same timeline as far as if they're going to put something on the ballot?
Mm.
For example, like fire stations. Like
so one thing that I hear is that we can find out how much about renewals.
Because if we have something like that on the same ballot at the same time, sometimes we ask for this and that for that.
Yeah. And that's back to the whole thing around the strategy. What's the best date to go? And
because this is for an
August election then, too.
No, that was our first
election. I'm going to go
lie to that. Right.
I don't want that. They're part of
that
was, because that can impact that as well.
Oh, it's going to impact. No matter what, you're going to have, when you go for a bond, you go out to get the yes vote. The no vote's going to be there. You go get the number of yes votes you need.
And the problem that everyone needs to understand is that if we push for this bond to be on the ballot 26, and we don't see the end of this construction until 2030, we still have to continue to pay to upkeep the buildings that are existing and the issues that are ongoing. You know, what if we need another more elevator work at the middle school?
Yeah.
Or, you know, something of that sort. There's still going to be. But that always will be.
That always will.
But we'll have that part of the renewal process. So we'll calendar, so you guys have a big calendar. But
yeah.
From what we know from the township, so we can get it.
Okay.
Okay. So then the last item I had was there was a fairly request that we have a conversation around the budget. And so I have that on the handouts right in front of you. You already had this handout before, and so it did not change. And next week, Cassie will be presenting a budget. We'll be doing a final budget in front of you, and then also a budget for next year. And so that the budget is will be the budget. You have to have an approved budget by June 30th. Never had anyone not go into July without a past budget. We're required to. For us, we're projecting that balance in the final budget will be given next week, but the preliminary one that we had done back in February showed us going in, I think it was like around $5 million. So what we know, though, is that that would only happen is if you we used every single line item, which meant every single grant, every single thing got spent down. We know that is not reality inside the budget.
Why is that not reality?
Because of our district, for example, in the last 3 weeks, we had, I think, what was it, Cindy? 10 terminations in that period.
Yep.
So that that shifts on staffing. The other part is
I don't understand what you mean by that shift on staff. Because a lot of positions got incurred, there was other positions that came up, and then
we laid off around 30 people beginning mid April, and then I've had
their position is not with us next year.
Okay. Pardon me?
Yep. They weren't laid off. Their position is not with us next year.
Terminated 30 employees.
No, well, yeah.
Okay, and then they have an opportunity to apply.
Yes, and a lot of them have. But then we also have had resignations and some terminations that were high ticket items.
You know, so my point is that...
So where's those numbers? Like, what are we talking
that's
about?
That's my point, is they're not immediate. So our budget will not reflect those people still inside the budget, because even though they're not with us, they're still in it. Like, for example, for a lot of them, their last payday was the 10th, okay? And so even though, so as finishing them off, they turn things around for Cassie, I got to pull them out so it gets into a final budget. That's what I said. You're not going to have a final exact number because she has to protect the budget and be very conservative that no line item will be open, okay? Now, our internal process is, yes, we want to get better at making it so that it's closer, okay, that there's not a variance there because we still project that when it's all said and done, when the audited budget comes in September, that we'll be seeing right around $7.7 million of fund balance. And that's what you see on one page there.
So let's go to historically, and I'm saying historically meaning since I've been involved, and that's been a couple of years before I got in the seat, so now, there's always been a conversation about where the fund balance should be, and it's always been a percentage.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to all of them, being you better stay between 8 and 12 or we're going to be in trouble. Mm-hmm. And that is where Manure Public Schools have settled. And so from my perspective, I understand that. Someone before me determined that that's what functions and that's what works. And so as far as I know, that didn't change. And so how do we go from it should be 8 to 12 to 6%? That's what I don't understand. Like, why did we not stick in the 8-12? Why are we sitting down at 5 and 6?
Secondly, speaking of board policy, is that the goal is 7% for your general fund balance. However, we have projects that have been approved that are coming out of that fund balance, so that draws that down.
But when there's
so I can't make the budget just be 7% fund balance. I have to budget for the projects that have been approved, the people that we have hired, the things that we have ongoing. I can't make the numbers.
No, I'm not suggesting that you do. What I'm saying is when these projects come, and I bring it up all the time, this is massive amounts of money going out. Who's paying attention to this? Who's paying attention to whether we've got the money to do this or we don't?
Yep.
And if we're sitting at, and we're supposed to be saying, well, we 8-12 is where it was, but if the policy is 7%, how did we get... how did those decisions get made and say, hey, just so you know, we're bringing this forward, but it's going to reduce our fund balance beyond the parameters that are set in policy. So when that, we talk about trust a lot, so when you bring that to me, I trust that y'all have already figured that out.
Well, when it's, I hear exactly what you're saying, Darla. So here's a, when you look at, we think in terms of two factors. One is cash flow to pay for September, because we don't get any state aid in September, and not have to borrow. Okay, so that's a factor right there. And as long as we're, our percentage makes so we don't have to borrow, we're good. Now, when it gets, now there's early warning systems set up by the state of Michigan, and you dip into that, you have to give information there. But that's why, though, when we look at this rate here, this 10.7 million, and dropping to 7.7 million is what we are predicting we're going to drop to this year, okay, when that audited budget comes in the door, is that that's why we're reducing our expenditures by $2 to $2.5 million for next year.
And look at this, and I came in right where it started kicking off.
Yeah.
And so that's about the time that I got here.
Yeah.
And that's when the borrowing got to stop.
Yeah.
We didn't have to borrow money in order to continue because of the way the money
yeah.
fell in.
Yeah,
money.
We're gonna.
And I don't
borrow. So right here,
the way ISD was paying us
yeah.
the money.
Yeah.
Well, we know that, but they accounted for that.
So right here.
The, but our budget, 81% accounted for that.
Well, in your 2018 year, most likely when the year that you wouldn't have had to borrow. Back over here, for sure, this would have been very close not having
they
to.
They were borrowing when I came through.
Yeah.
At 2021.
Yeah.
They were borrowing then.
Go ahead.
I think 1920 was probably the last year that we borrowed.
Yep.
And that is around the time as well that the ISD started paying us some half of our special ed allocation in September. Previously, they were paying that all in December, so we had almost no cash flow in August. Well, August you would, but in September, when everything is starting for the school year and getting no state aid, no property tax, no nothing. So that's why we had to borrow. And then in 2021, obviously, we had a lot of COVID money that went into our fund balance because we didn't spend it all that first year. So some of the spend down is intentional, spending down those grant funds that are restricted.
Yeah.
And we, it shows as part of your fund balance just because we received the monies and it's restricted to what those intents were.
But have to use that money.
So you
right?
have to use that money.
So going forward, our goal will be now that that was our last ESSER fund's gone. Okay. So that's where we hit here. So now our goal will be to live inside this area right there.
Why? So let me look at it this way. You explained it and you said, okay, if you look at I think you said 18, 19, 20. For years that they had to borrow. Look what the fund balance was.
Oh, yeah, but,
but
we're seeing, though,
is... Part of that, Darla, was the cash flow.
Right.
I understand
because
that.
We weren't getting anything in September, so we didn't have the cash on hand to pay our expenses. Mm-hmm.
So
you do
but I just remember listening to all of them.
We get over $1 million in September for our special ed payment, and that carries us through that month. Of not receiving any, and we also draw down on our grant funds in September as well.
So, Cass, I think this will help you. At $7 million, what would that percentage be on to our fund balance? I'm going to say that's right about 10%.
If 4.5 was 6%, then that is probably roughly as close to 10%.
So that's my point. That's working, and that's why we're trying, we made those reductions so that we can be down the road, we may drop, but staying right in that $7-ish million range, right there, and that's our goal is to hover right around that line.
And we can't
there.
Always.
So if we were up there and we were sitting between 8 and 12, and we're way down there.
Oh no, this was
no,
8 and 12
that was
here.
Way
no.
about that was 20 some percent.
Yes.
When we were at 13 and 15.
Yeah.
When we were at 13 million, we were at above.
I hear things like all the money. I see all this money going out, and the money's going out, and the money's going out, and then I go, oh, we got a grant, but the grant covers this, and then someone was telling me today about how these grants work,
and, you know, the monies and you, I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So,
and that's part of the budget.
I don't want to be sitting on this board and someone saying Monroe Public Schools has financially went under or has financial problems and they had to do something because we weren't paying attention.
And a lot of our,
this is a big talk.
A lot of our expenses in the general fund are people, which you can't always immediately fix a number of people problem.
Well, they all got added.
Right, and that's why we had, not we, some of us had difficult conversations with those approximately 30 people that their positions were eliminated for the next year. Because we have to start having those hard conversations, and we're evaluating all those, the teachers that we've had resign. Mrs. Flynn is working with Mr. Malinowski and Ms. Joseph to see, do we need to replace that teacher, or can those courses be absorbed by someone else so their class load is maybe a little bit lower. So we're not always just doing a one for one, someone leaves, someone comes.
Right.
There's now we're doing an evaluation piece. Is this being used effectively? Do we need this position still? So that way
and that's
we can
also
correct some of the
right. And it's also come up because we are negotiating with teachers and administrators right now. And it was brought up in both case in both groups that we are not replacing people when they go. Well, we're not. If we've done the math and we know what we need to do, we've got to right fit our schools.
Right.
But
I mean, you need the teachers to teach the courses that you have.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need teachers to come in and then, oh, let's see how can we fill their day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of that going on when all the free money was flowing,
mm-hmm.
and I think it created a bit of a conundrum.
It
did. Now going forward, Cassie, okay, I'm looking at the big hump there, and obviously that was the COVID funds. If they were all designated, we had to get rid of the money. So now we're back down to around a 10% of our valuation, correct? Is that our goal going forward to be? So we're going to answer his question, and I'm going to take care of that and help two other questions.
That's not fair.
Part of my question. So from a cash flow perspective, the summer tax, which includes school tax, no?
Ours are winter tax. We get no summer tax
money.
We're strictly winter.
Okay. So that answers the cash flow.
So that
question.
Answers your question on that.
Yeah. Okay. So you won't see, for example, my assessor on the house went up the max to Headley, which was 4.5%. But you'll see that.
I'll see that in January.
Yeah.
Or
but remember, we're only going to see that in the sinking fund and in the bond because. When it goes, your money comes in, it goes to Lansing and for the per pupil amount. It doesn't go to the general.
That really
so it doesn't help us drop.
Unless
you sell my increase.
Unless
you
sell
your
second home,
yeah.
Your per pupil
So two things that might help is.
Now, our per pupil number is increasing.
Oh, number of students,
non-guess.
Yes.
So
yes,
that's yes. going to affect money as well.
It does. It has it. So, Gary, to answer your question, this is all ESSER up here.
Okay.
So, that's my point is that we're worth now to live inside roughly a $7 million fund base.
Got it. Which would be approximately 10%.
Be approximately 10%.
And
now,
and one more step about the. I'm on your diet. I got it. Now, this, if I go back to 18, 19, 20, I got 7.7 to 8.4.
Yeah.
That's where they started paying us in September, and we had
correct.
So that's what made the difference.
Yes.
So now we don't have to borrow because we get money from ISD.
We don't have
and so we just took that big hump out of there.
Yeah.
We came back down to earth where we're supposed to be.
So,
but we're not spending. We haven't changed the spending.
That's what we're doing.
But we have to do it. We can't
try. But I would also argue this is that when I came on 3 years ago, you two were almost coming onto the board, and it was all about we've got to get our academics up, right? So we had to do it in multiple different ways. One of the first ones we did was we probably hired 20 teachers to lower class sizes. Okay? And we have now seen at the lower out, that's where it went, we've seen that shift. I mean, we have two kindergarten classrooms that have 100% proficiency. One at Raisinville, one at Custer this year.
What grades?
Two kindergarten.
okay? And it is. And so that costs us money. If you think about a teacher with a $100,000 price tag, $20 million. So now what's going to happen, though, is, and then we did all this PD, and so we're PDing up teachers. And so it's back to shifting the monies. So we're spending a lot of money into tier two and tier three, okay? But, right, because we're addressing that tier one, less kids are going in. So it's all going to, it's that idea, it's that big wave, we got to flip it over. And that's what we've been working on doing. So it's cost us money, but our outcome is a lot better when we look down at our kindergarten, first, second graders, because that's where we knew we had to get home. Because if we kept waiting, and that's what we shared 2 years ago, is you can't remediate your way out of a problem at the fourth and fifth grade level. You got to do it down in the kindergarten, first grade level. And that's what we've done. So now, in different positions inside of our district, there are some that probably will not get replaced. Or if we, and now that then we'll look at class size, okay, we've been sitting at that 17 number, I'm sorry, kindergarten, you're going to go to 20. Okay, well, that one teacher is $100,000.
So why are we cutting instructional costs rather than all the behavioral and all the supports and all those?
So you got to do it, but you can't. Like,
creating an imbalance in our system currently on the cost.
But they're both, cutting but some of those behavioral are out of grants, too. And so what we're talking about is general fund dollars. And that's a big caveat right there. You can't use a grant to fund a general education teacher.
Right.
Okay. But we did cut some admin and that.
Yes.
You know, you put a back, but in a different position, that's empty.
And the other part is, you know, we look at operations and we look at in different areas. That's real sure. What I was going to also say is this, is that 1 year, you know, that you're going to see is it will be up and down. It won't be a straight line at $7 million. Some years, as we keep going on, our goal is this next year, right, Lansing does well. Hopefully we can look maybe at a dollar, okay, and fluctuate right there. And so, but we knew, and that's why I've been preaching for 2 years on this, that we knew we were coming to a bottom, got to shore things up. So that's why we made those staffing shifts.
I understand what you're saying. I understand that that's the number that you're comfortable with. But when we look at the policy, is it matching, Cassie?
At $7 million, 10%.
So?
And the policy is 7%.
So you're a little above.
Yeah.
I know, but so when you're talking about expenditures and you're talking about the money going out, we're talking about all this massive money going out, and you just made the statement earlier about, well, we've been spending a lot more than we typically would. I mean, so all I keep seeing is we're spending, and we're not spending by tens of thousands, we're spending by hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
We'll sit there and sign away $1 million in one night.
And
so we're looking at it as we need to cut, we need to cut, but we always want the Cadillac plan. Like, I never understand that.
Keep in mind, this is general fund dollars. This isn't sinking fund. This is.
I understand. I'm not talking about.
So a lot of those technology projects.
Well, they are under general fund.
But if it's
most of it's millage or.
So any of the big projects out of sinking fund or the bond are not reflected in this.
I know,
coming out of a different pocket.
So let's look at, I'll bring up a budget that I brought up a few times, is the athletic budget.
Mm-hmm.
We sat here one night, and I know we've asked, you know, about where the budget is, and it said the expenditures are about $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that down. But when you look at what we're budgeted for, they're budgeted for 1.4. So how are they spending $2 million when we've only budgeted them at 1.4? That's $600,000 in one department that didn't stay within their budget. And so I'm like, you when I heard that, I'm like, well, how can you have expenditures of $2,000 if your budget is 1.4? That's why I was like.
I think you're comparing two different things. What I submitted in board grades was last year's schedule of expenditures and revenues. And what you approved for the budget is this year's expenditures and revenues.
So in the conversation we had here, that was just recently,
mm-hmm.
and Chad was here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I pull up my notes, which is
sure.
a little scattered right now, so I'm not sure I'm going to find it in the next 5 minutes.
But in those notes, I was very clearly, we're currently spending $2 million in athletics. But we, the board, has only ever budgeted that for 1.4. Who increased their budget to $2 million since Dr. Ray left? I don't remember everybody coming up to the board and saying, hey, can we increase the athletic budget from 1.4 to 2 million? I don't remember that conversation.
The budget can't increase unless the board has.
That's my point. How can they have $2 million of expenditures?
So where are you seeing 1.4 versus 2?
Isn't that what the historical athletic budget has been?
It's typically approximately $2 million.
Someone said it was 1.4 million to the athletic budget. I wrote it on the same paper.
Sure. So what are you asking? What their current budget is or what they've spent?
So my understanding.
Or are you implying that we've increased the budget and the board hasn't improved it? Is that what you're implying?
What I'm stating is my understanding of that budget in particular was it was a 1.4 million dollar budget over the last few years, and it's been pretty stable. My understanding is that budget has been consistently, it's not overspent. I would say our budget shouldn't be overspent.
Right.
And so if the budget has always been 1.4, if it's still 1.4, how can we say we have $2 million of expenditures in a $1.4 million budget? So that's where I'm at.
What I'm trying to ask is where you're getting the 1.4 from.
The day that we sat here in that meeting, someone had it been you or someone else.
So it was in here, though, right? Okay.
It was in the meeting that we sat here.
If you look at the financial document I had in May's board briefs, the athletic line has a current budget of $1.3 million. However, some of athletics expenditures for transportation are in the transportation function. So there's more than one function of athletic activity. So depending upon how you're looking at documents, you're not seeing the entire picture. If you're only looking at school activities, athletics, and 293, that's $1.3 million. So if there's...
So that brings a lot of clarity.
So
athletics in general... Yeah, so if in the athletic budget...
I just want to know, the athletic has a budget of $1.3 million. Do they go outside of that budget?
They can't do that.
That's my point. So how can they have $2 million of expenditures? You're saying it's because it's not truly out of the academic athletic budget. They have their 1.3 plus they have another 600,000 or 700,000 in costs outside. Is that what I'm saying? Because I thought all transportation was through Max. I thought that was a contract we just signed.
Okay. So in my account structure, each function means a different thing. Transportation is one function.
Right.
Athletics is a different function.
Right.
However, some of transportation is provided for athletic activities.
Out of Mets.
So it could be Mets, it could be another third party, it could be our own
bus,
it could be our own drivers driving the bus. It's not just blanketly Mets. So part of that transportation cost is affiliated with athletics, but it is in a different function. So if you're just looking at the financial documents at the athletic activities function, as the way it's displayed, you're not seeing the entirety of the athletic costs. There's also some field maintenance that is under operations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more than just that 1.3 when you're looking at the financial statement I provide to the board.
So that's
what I'm trying to say. It's in more than one bucket. So when I say athletic spends approximately $2 million, that's between three and four different function codes. So that's different areas on the financial statement that you have to look to find those activities, which they're going to be lumped in with the other things in function 271 for transportation and function 261 for operations and maintenance. That's going to be lumped in with all sorts of other things. So that's why in our annual financial statements, there's that additional schedule so that the board can see here are all the athletic revenues, here are all the athletic expenditures, so that you see it separately between those functions as an additional schedule that was asked for by the board. That makes more sense or not?
And all that is audited
Correct.
Which,
and the audit always comes back
positive. Very positive.
Well, audit is on how you're using the money, and then you're categorizing. In fact, really, what I'm saying is if you're overspent, that's a hard question.
They're looking at that as well. We have to be in alignment with our budget. If I overspend my budget, that would be a finding on the audit.
And I don't think you've had a finding.
No.
No.
We've not had a finding since I've worked here.
It can't be good.
And beyond that, I'm sorry.
Right.
So my question was just the correlation of those two statements at the same meeting. And so that was my question. How did they correlate? Are people saying that?
Saying I don't want to overspend, someone had just said earlier we're spending a lot. Here's a great question.
Yes. So, assuming with the discussion I've heard at the state level, you might get a $400 per student increase, which at our current enrollment is about $1.75 million. Mm-hmm. When do we start seeing that money roll in?
October. Okay, so it is October.
Like October.
So our state Our state aid comes the 20th of each month, before, after, if it's on the weekend, it doesn't work before. So, and it's spread from October through August. September, we get nothing. So we get 1/11 times.
Yeah.
And they would use our previous pupil count until the fall count is certified.
Okay. So,
usually the October one is very... That's what I'm budgeting is around 400 because that's been out. Everything else is kind of a little right now. But they've all said at least 400.
The other component of that budget, and that's why I use them as an example because that was information that was shared in that evening, is what is the budgetary, you know, where are we at with each department and with the budgets that are currently set? And at what point should the board look at those and say, do we need to make adjustments on those based on where we project ourselves to be? Because the board makes the decision on where the budget is. And do we think we should spend more money in one category and less?
Well, that's a proposal.
Sorry, that's partly my job, but I provide the board every, I won't say every month, but every couple of months I do provide a financial statement on the general fund. That provides a year-to-date versus the budget that was approved by the board as far as where the spending is. So if you have questions about anything on there, that would be the time to ask. But typically, we do...
Could you just add, like, just at the beginning of your report, in those board briefs, just this puts us at 10% fund equity, or this amount puts us at...
I think that would be, I agree.
Simplified for us.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So my question still remains, the
review and adjust?
Yes. At what point, because things have changed a lot even since I've been on there, so at what point do we do that? That's my question.
So typically we bring two amendments to the board. We have to do an initial budget in June and then historically, it's been in the spring, the First Amendment, and then the final amendment in June. Based on the way...
It is June.
Correct. And you'll be hearing me on June 23rd.
February.
So, and this year, just based on things ongoing, I'm hoping to have an amendment in the fall versus not until February to get a better picture of where we're at. And then we'll see if we need another one in the spring or if we're able to see the final.
So that's a presentation. So when do we address, like, the Carrie's point there? Like, there's no time to do that at that meeting because it's already the end of June and you have to approve it.
So what you're actually getting into
she
is...
She worded it better than I did.
So what you're talking about is you as a board member saying, I think we need to eliminate this, and this there. And what we've said as administration...
I just said relook at it.
Well, that's right. You know, that's why I said we went through and we've looked at different positions. It will also reduce the candidate areas with operations and others so we can live inside that $7 million number. That's our ultimate goal there. And when we
talk about,
so the answer is that...
When does that happen?
Unless we're outside...
I'm sorry.
It's
a hard answer.
It's a hard answer. When it comes to the amendment section, Cassie and I were watching cash flow, or we're watching everything, and if we're sensing, okay, we have to make a recommendation to the board, we'll come forward with a recommendation. But if we can, as an administration, make the appropriate adjustments to stay inside to get us and keep us at that $7 million number, that's what we're going to do. Because it all rests here, and this is probably the best example I can give you, is that out of your superintendent to make sure that academics are increasing, student, which is your student achievement, that we are keeping and retaining quality, high-quality staff across the district, and that our budget is intact. And so this is one of these, this is my, really my, one of my focal areas, like keeping that budget intact. And so we've made those adjustments on the academics, and now it's like, okay, we have to make these next level of adjustments. And as you know, when 75-ish percent of your budget, roughly, is staff, well, that's where it's going to be. But that's why, too, like Dave Payne and I presented, you know, how we're going, we made that shift on the cleaning of our buildings next year. So we put together a plan that if the plan works the way we think, it's going to save this district a lot of money. And so that's operation of that plan and it being going and happening. But when it comes to you as a board member, if you're looking at, like, no, I would much rather us sit down and go function by function and make those kinds of reductions, that is a whole different conversation.
So the conversation is, we as board members have fiscal responsibility. Mm-hmm. We are ultimately responsible for the financial stability of the system.
Yeah.
Okay? And so in that regard, at what point do we take a look at it and say, is it the way that the board wants it to be set and to analyze it and say, well, we think we're setting these boundaries right. That is our job. And it's not here to say, it's our job to look at that because that's our purview.
Yeah.
That's not your purview. That's our purview.
But
and then we look at you and say, okay, well, we're sitting at a 1.6 million.
We run a $70 million business.
I understand that. We're the board of a $70 million business.
But if I can interject, I think it's the superintendent and administration's responsibility to manage the buckets and where it's going. It's our job to make sure the overall numbers are okay to solvency. It's not our job to micromanage.
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying the bucket.
Sounds like it.
No, I'm saying the bucket. If we say this bucket you have 2 million, this bucket you have 3 million, this bucket you have 4 million.
That's micromanaging.
No, that's setting the parameters and saying, I'm giving you this many million dollars, this to go here, and then you tell us how that works for you.
Well,
the board has no fiscal oversight at all in its essence.
I think we do, though.
Yeah.
I mean, every time we approve something
yeah.
that they're spending,
when we approve
that
a budget that has all the buckets
yes.
in it, period. We approve it, and they stay within those buckets, which the audit says you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's the agreement we
yeah.
came to. We're going to stay
at
10%, right?
Well,
so
next month or the end of this
yeah.
month, we'll
so
see what the buckets
week.
Are for
mm-hmm.
2000.
You know,
but we have to approve it because I have
we
to
will.
Approve it.
We will.
That's a, but that's a, you actually have a good question right there. Is the buckets do shift
right.
and the amounts inside those buckets. For example, we'll use our administrative. So you have your administrative bucket right there. And so you may have an administrator that leaves, so that bucket goes down, or you may, nobody leaves. And so that bucket increases only because of the wage increase. And so as we go through each of the buckets with Cassie, those are the parameters we're looking at. And so we abide by the contract, and we work through the contract. Okay, class sizes say you need to stay here. That means we need this many teachers to do this. And so that bucket gets set. When it really comes down to how much, as a board, that you have control, just like how much control we have, general fund dollars, okay, there's not that much control because you're going to be adhering to the contracts. You're going to be adhering to class. Is like we were describing before. Well, we can do this through cleaning. So we can do this. We can shave this budget, control this budget here. We can. What about operations? You know, there's general fund costs there. Athletics, yes. Athletics is a general fund cost, and so like other school districts have done in our communities. They don't drive on weekends. They only do certain sports, or they don't do this. We cover everything, okay?
Well,
not
everything.
We cover a lot of stuff. It feels like we cover a lot of stuff. My point is,
we
can always, if we think there's a spot where, like, okay, we're feeling that pressure from Lansing, like, we're seeing, instead of a possibly maybe a $400 increase, that number shifts out. All right, well, we got choices right here. We're going to have to do X and recommend X to you. And at the end of the day, that's where you guys will do. For example, in the last conversation I had was about pay to participate, right? I don't like pay to participate. Okay, I think that's a bad space. That's a $100,000 piece of revenue. Well, like, as a board, you can say, listen, we're okay that, Andy, because one of your goals you have to be fiscally responsible, is that we're okay spending $100,000 every year on fund balance to not have pay to participate. That's an elect you have. Just like nobody in this room, okay, was on the board when they made the decision to put the turf field in, okay? The fund balance part right there. Okay, and so that's where you do have say, okay, and we can bring it to you saying, okay, this is something that would be bigger. Do you want something like this or not? And so, you know, for us, a lot of it is we're trying to also figure out how to continue to, what you talk about, like some of our SEL groups and other pieces right there. One of the areas that we spend our amount of money is at 31A, okay, that's at risk money. And so what we talk about is, okay, as we shift the work we're doing, make so we can push against some of our general fund costs in that mechanism too. So as an administration, that's the work we're doing, because our goal is to keep us at that 10% number. Now, if as a board, you're saying, no, we want that number to grow, then it's a whole other conversation.
Well, that's part of what the conversation was here tonight. Are we comfortable with where it's sitting? Do we want it to change? You know, a lot of pushback on that. A lot of pushback on that. You know, the question then becomes, when do we look at the budgets? And Cassie said, well, the board has to vote for that budget amount to increase. Well, if that's the case, when does that happen? And that's a real question. It's not criticizing. Nope. It's not attacking anything. Yep. It's just asking those questions. Yep. If the board sets that, when was that last set? And how relative is that to now and the current structure that we're doing? I think that's real questions that aren't trying to step on anybody's toes, but the board does have fiscal responsibility in the end.
The board last approved the budget amendment in February.
Yeah.
And at that time, I described the budget assumptions I was using at that time. And then when I present it next week, you'll see what has happened.
So that's what I'm misunderstanding.
Yeah.
I'm thinking by the time that comes to us, it's always right, you know, right at the end of June. So I'm like, okay, we really don't have a choice. We don't have a choice on what this budget looks like, because it's the end of June. This has to be approved by June. And how do we make changes to that? I would like that A to participate totally gone. I think for the next school year, I think that's something that I would really like to see. But how do we make that happen when, you know, is it that night that we say, okay, we want
no.
this done? Right. You see my point?
So the board, for something like that, the board would have to take action to indicate that we're not going to do pay to participate.
It would
so
just
I
be a motion?
Not,
it would. So what
I
would happen?
I would not reflect that in my budget tomorrow. Not tomorrow, but on that same night. I could not prepare the documents and update everything then. But that would be something that would be in the next amendment.
Yeah. So what would happen?
But once the board takes action, then yes, if the board chooses, then we would let Dr. Hessen and Ms. Carr Marshall know, hey, the board has made a change, there is not going to be a pay to participate. If they had collected any, then we would give those checks or cash or what have you back to the families, and then that would be reflected in the next amendment. Anything that you're doing now until a couple months before I do my amendment, because it takes time, that's what's reflected. And then it's always, everything's always a month or two behind
when
I'm presenting it to you.
Right. So we can make a motion at the next board meeting that the you would no longer, however you word it, do pay to play and pass that motion, and that would be effective.
Yes.
Correct.
We had that to the agenda.
It can be added.
Thank you.
Yes. And I guess back to the point about the financials is set the budget. We get into the amendment process, and you're diving in there. That would be the win. It's like, okay, is there anything you guys can do to shift that money or that cost? Okay, so that's more during those amendment times, getting those into those questions. But I will say this one point right here to you is that the job is, yes, to be one is we audited, so we make sure that back to the fiscal side, that is happening. The two, that we've made it abundantly clear, and you're, where's the money going? Okay, it's like going to Laurel and some programming right there. And so when people want to, well, technology is always happening. But
Dave takes
costs as well. As a taxpayer, if I'm sending my taxes and I want it to be spent, I would be irritated if it was just growing in the bank.
Well, I'm not suggesting
that. The idea is it's just sitting on a bunch of money in the bank.
You don't want
15% to work to be.
No, I wasn't suggesting that.
Well, I mean 7 to 10%.
Especially when you're going for a bond.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't pass a bond when you're sitting on 20% of the
bond. No, I don't think anybody was suggesting 20%. I was looking at 8 to 12%
standard.
Yeah.
And
we're winding this out tonight.
But I'm giving you next week, and you pass me a budget, it will not be 10%. You're gonna be looking at going, oh, son of a gun, it's not there. But remember, you're passing a shot in the dark. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is what you're passing next week. The audit will come in, audit numbers will move up. The budget that we propose, it's going to look like junk, only because we don't have, we've done a lot with our expenditures, but we don't know the revenue side. Okay, and so that's a shot in the dark. We can shore that one up later on. Do understand, though, it's, when we look at it even further, if we're going along, if there's areas that we can reduce, we will. And that's because back to my job is making sure that through my evaluation, that's how superintendents lose jobs, is not being fiscally. That's how you also lose your job. Okay, so you're asking about, okay, what happens? It's me. So if I work, I'm not doing it, solve it, we've got a problem.
I look at it the other way. I look at it because we approve it. That is our responsibility because I could see, you know, if someone in that position saying, hey, we brought it to you, you approved it, you know, and that's true.
But it is to a point.
They shouldn't be bringing it to us if they don't have the money.
Thank you. That's exactly it. And so it would be, that'd be the mismanagement.
Yeah.
Okay, the fiscal mismanagement. And so that's exactly a point right there. And
that's why I will make sure that.
Yeah. They're going to bring a bunch of line items. All those line items should say we're fiscally stable. If we discover later that those line items aren't what they are, then it's right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can only approve what we know.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to do their job in this room.
Right.
Okay.
So if the state, God forbid, comes back and says, we're not giving you any more per student, I'm assuming there'll be amendments to the budget coming out really
fast.
Quick.
Correct.
Yeah. And what you're going to see is, then you're going to see us going into plan B and C, and nobody likes those plans. But that's where you go, because then you're going to be into most layoffs, and then you're going to be looking, okay, so the point is that 7.7, that $7 million, that's when the audit's done, that's where we should land, okay? So it still keeps us there. But as we're going forward, that's what becomes the problem. The state doesn't do.
Yeah.
If we don't say revenue, but
October.
And as I usually say in my budget presentations, I can only present what I know at this at this moment, and we have to budget conservatively to ensure that anything we have ongoing, if we've still got 2 weeks left, we won't get payoffs for projects that worked on this month until next month. I can't see in the future of what amount of the work is going to be done, how many people are actually going to work, this time.
It also affects goals, like when we're looking at what goals are set for the district, and as we were talking about that today, who because no longer have a job will affect the outcomes of what's happening within the system for sure.
I'd actually argue the other direction. The strategic plan's job that now help guide those monies. So if we view that student achievement, and we're talking about some of those, what we call aims, you know, are what we really go, well, that's where the money's at. And if we say down on the community engagement one, if we had something in that one, and there's goals, so, well, bringing forward recommendations, that's what we're, you know, there. And so it's almost in the flip of like, tell me what you're presenting, if it's something that's new and not normal, how this supports our strategic plan. Because if it doesn't, it shouldn't be bulleted. It should not be brought in front of you.
Okay.
That's all I have, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Cassie.
Since we have no public here, I'm assuming we have no public.
No, we do not.
Okay, can I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Do we have support? Show of hands. That concludes our agenda. Come on, Darrell, we've got a baseball game. No public school sport.